everybody, and welcome to Radio Radar, episode 105. Still haven't found that 100th episode. But hey, who cares about that? I'm your host, Henry Gilbert. That's H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter. You should be following me to see all my hilarious retweets. And I'm here with...
Lorenzo Valoria.
Anthony Snyder.
Ashley Reed.
I'm gonna touch you on the shoulder every time tonight.
We should just do like
just
a
pass it along.
Like a high five.
A high five. That's more friendly than just like hey.
It'll be like a shoulder. It's like electricity. It needs to pass through contact. Anyways.
Well, it's been another week, guys. Sure has.
Yeah.
Another week.
It was a short week this week, though.
Yeah. I feel like it was full enough drama to fill a month.
But,
yeah.
God.
A lot of drama I don't want to talk about at all on this show, and we're not going
to. Deserve to be talked about.
Yep, nothing to talk about. But what there is to talk about is the top seven badass boss teams.
Yay.
Is there a...
I told you.
I always forget if there's like a top seven song or
something.
There
is not. Though we would totally accept one if someone wants to send one in.
I thought I found it.
Did you?
Well, you didn't give it to me.
No, we used it.
We'll figure this out.
Oh, my God. It was the top.
It's the top seven.
Okay, let's move on.
All right, badass boss teams, which we also have an accompanying video for this on the site, so you should check out the video that's attached to this episode or to that top seven, or it's on our YouTube page. Check it out. But so number seven is the
number seven,
the Koopalings. Nope, sorry, I keep it's cool. Hey, yeah, the Koopalings. So the Koopalings, they first appeared in the Super Mario Brothers 3. They were created because, you know, in the original Super Mario Brothers, you just kill Bowser each level. At the end of every castle is Bowser, except. Here's a Mario secret maybe you guys don't know. If you were to kill the Bowser if you make Bowser fall into the lava, he's just dead. Mm-hmm. But every level Bowser, if you beat him with fireballs, when he dies, he transforms into a different enemy, like a Goomba or a Koopa.
Right. They're like impersonators.
They are impersonating him. Just to make it clear, the Bowser you fight at the end is the only true Bowser.
Yeah, and the Bowser at the end shoots the most fireballs, so he's the most powerful.
But to get around all those Bowser clones, then they just made up Bowser's children, who are just miniature versions of him with different personalities who, like, are at the end of every world. And I like their, you know, sibling team-up kind of thing, that they're all just, like, you know, a bunch of cool kids out to kill Mario together.
Yeah, we talked about this before. It was like, you know, where did the Koopalings come from?
Yeah, who did he get with? Who did he roll with?
They're not actually his kids. They changed their mind.
They were his kids before. They are not his kids now. When a colleague of mine, Dan Reichert, he had this awesome article that I wish I could have done at some point, but he got an interview at Game Informer. He got an interview with Shigeru Miyamoto and interviewed him about a lot of cool stuff, and then at the end he apparently was just like, I'm going to ask you 10 really stupid questions about Mario history. Could you answer them? And the questions were like, what's Mario's real last name? Because in the movie it was Mario, and they're like, no, it's not that. And they said, so who's the mother of these? And then he's like, the Koopalings, we may have said it before, but the Koopalings are officially not his children. His only child is Bowser Jr., and we don't know who the mother is there. That's it from Miyamoto's mouth, but whether they're his kids or not, I think they are still really cool and have all these distinct looks. I know some people like poo-pooed them being in Mario Kart 8 because there's just like 8 or 7 slots filled up by basically the same character, but they're not.
They're all pretty
slightly different.
Like they in Mario Brothers 3, they each do something different, like based off their personality. Like the girl shoots a bunch of like earrings at you, and
Wendy O'Koopa.
Yeah, and was it Iggy was the first one?
Yeah, Iggy.
And then there's
how
a fat
dude.
How
many can we name here? Iggy, Lemmy, Wendy, Roy, Morton Koopa Jr.
Von Koop
Ludwig
something.
Von Koopa.
That's yes.
And
Bowser Jr.
No, there's a seventh one we're missing here.
It doesn't. Yeah.
Is it the?
Yeah, that
it's
one.
Like,
guy.
It's like naming the, ball naming the seven dwarves.
What about the one with the giant kaboom box and the sunshades?
Oh, that's Roy.
That's Roy.
Roy's okay. Got the cool sunglasses.
I did manage to find one clip. The one clip I could find of all of their voices. Maybe it'd kick
sure,
in somebody's
memory.
Sure,
let's give it a listen.
That cleared things up.
Yeah, that cleared it up.
no, I don't know, maybe.
That's Earl. That's the last one. Yeah, that did it.
They all showed up. Well, yeah, so they disappeared after, they pretty much were gone after Super Mario World, and they only returned in the new Super Mario Brothers games, like in for the Wii. New Super Mario Brothers Wii was when they came back, and they had teamed up with Bowser Jr., which in the comments to last week's article, several people gave me guff about being a hater on Bowser Jr., but though I do agree with Lorenzo, Clown Copter is cool.
Like, it is
cool to have that in Smash Brothers. Allegedly, he's yet to be confirmed, but come on.
If he fights with the Clown Copter thing, that would be just so interesting. Like, I think that's much better than having him just on the ground.
Well, at least make him better than just, it's Short Bowser. Like, as much as I love the option to play as Toon Link and regular Link,
yeah.
You got to work to differentiate him.
And like, I think in Smash he would be too small of a character, wouldn't he? He'd be... Well, I mean, what's the smallest
character
in there?
Little Mac's pretty small.
I guess so, yeah.
Isn't Kirby kind of small?
Kirby
too?
Is... Kirby's, no,
Kirby's tiny. And Pikachu.
It's not
Pikachu's
too pretty. Small. They're all... Those ones are all... I guess he would be the same size as them. But whatever. Clown Copter is awesome. Super Mario 3 throwback. I don't know why I said Mario.
Hey, why don't you look up on YouTube if you can find them from the cartoon? Put in like Koopa Kids cartoon, Koopa Kids Saturday morning cartoon. While you look that up, we're going to move on to the next one, which is the Council of Disney. Oh, sorry, number six.
Number six.
I'm really messing with Ashley now.
Number
six.
Yeah,
thank you. Number six. The Council of Disney Villains from Kingdom Hearts. The strange crossover that nobody would have expected that is now like a AAA franchise.
Yeah. It's supposed to be a one-time deal.
And now it's like there have been probably like, if you count all the spinoffs, like eight games. Like there's been eight games with a ninth being Kingdom Hearts 3 on the way.
So they made those eight games that quick, but it took how long to make all those Mega Mans?
It actually it's taken them a really long time to make Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah.
Yes, it has.
But, I mean, I bet we'll be lucky if Kingdom Hearts 3 even comes out in, like, 2016.
It's going to be the new Last Guardian. They're going to say it's going to come out, but...
I'm hoping at TGS this year we'll get a surprise appearance from Last Guardian. I know they've said they won't, but that only makes me think more so that they will.
I don't know. I've just given up hope on the Last Guardian. But anyway,
the
Disney
Council of Disney Villains. So yeah, this one is a cool team just because it feeds on your love and appreciation of Disney villains already.
So the leader is Maleficent, right? And then there's like Jafar.
The best Disney villain.
Thank you.
Oogie Boogie, Hades. Who else am I missing? Ursula?
Ursula's
there.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Hook is there.
Hook's
Isn't
there.
Scar? I know there's King.
Lion King.
I don't.
He comes along at some point, but he's not, like, in the very first meetup, he's not in it.
And then Pegleg Pete is there the whole time, like, as their, like, sidekick. Or he's, like, negotiating for Maleficent at sometimes. Like, hey, you should join up. Like,
yeah, he's her lackey.
You know what sucks is, Maleficent's like the most evil of the Disney villains. And then if you watch that new Maleficent movie.
She's not evil at all.
It's like, oh,
she's
man,
got a
you ruined
reason.
It.
She's not evil.
Well, you can't make her the star of the movie and then have her actually be evil. Like the kids,
I guess
she's got to be an
so.
Anti-hero that the kids will want to buy toys of.
Yeah, it is a kids movie, I guess. But if it was a real, real cool story. They would have kept it. They would have just made her be mean.
I like how they're making all the Disney bad guys like actually. They're like, oh, they're not actually that bad.
They're
this
misunderstood.
Is what happened. Yeah, exactly.
Which is like the opposite of what we like. It's like we like the Disney villains because they're so awful and despicable, and they have personality.
But yeah, if you're popular enough, then they don't want you to be a bad role model for kids. So then they soften your edges, getting rid of what people liked you for in the first place.
Yeah.
Weak
sauce. Anyway.
But in Kingdom Hearts, they put a lot of effort into you know, getting the right people, like getting most of their original voice actors to have them feel like, yeah, they just stepped off the movie screen. Like,
yeah.
Like, actually, Alice, she's not one of the villains, but Alice from Alice in Wonderland, I believe it was, or was it Wendy? It was one of the young ladies. She appears and is herself, like, it's the actress who played her 50 years ago, just because
wow.
she was
oh,
a little
wow.
she was a little girl when they cast her, and she still can do the voice now.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
Must be Alice. The Queen of Hearts is one of them, too, right?
Yeah, Queen of Hearts and Captain Hook.
So, yeah.
Captain Hook's really cool. Who is your favorite Disney villain, at least from the game, of the people we've named so far? I think,
man,
I do like Captain Hook myself.
I choose Jafar.
Jafar is pretty cool. I think Maleficent, just because she's the most evil. And I really liked Sleeping Beauty as a kid.
It's really between Hades and Ursula for me. I love those two. They're the best ones.
Hades was the best singer, I think. But
Hades was kind of Hercules, the movie, was one of those.
Hades is funny.
I didn't even really watch that as much as I watched the other ones. I think it was because I was a little bit older when it came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I watched it like once. I was like, oh, yeah. Okay.
But they got James Woods to do the voice.
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah. But like Aladdin, I've watched Aladdin like 10,000 times. And
did you have
Lion
the VHS?
King. Oh, hell yeah.
Yes.
And Lion King like 10,000 times. All those ones.
Yep.
Just
so
a million times.
It's really cool to actually get to fight them, because it's like, yes, this is what I've always wanted.
Yeah, and they look really cool with the, you know, cartoon animation.
Number five. Number five.
Number five. All right, let's move on.
Did it stop? Oh, it's not working.
It's cool.
It's fate.
Whatever.
Well, number five, we're going to have to go through this one fast anyway, unless I'm just going to have to leave this one up to Lorenzo. The prime evils of Diablo.
Don't leave it up to me.
I don't remember it too well either, to be honest.
You know, they're just the main bad guys of the Diablo series, and you know, Diablo is the Lord of Terror, right?
Mm-hmm. Satan.
Yeah.
Mephisto's the Lord of
Chaos.
Hatred, and then Baal is destruction.
Lord of destruction.
Well,
yeah.
We disagreed on this, if it's Baal or Baal. Like,
I think it's Baal. I'm pretty sure they say Baal.
Yeah. I was one of the Baal people, but now I'm on Baal.
I think historically you could argue that, but I don't know. In the game, I think they call it Baal.
But yeah, there's a lot of demons you face. You face a lot of lesser evils and other evils, and then you work your way up to the prime evils. Like, I think do you just face Diablo in the first Diablo, and then they introduce the other two?
It's just Diablo, and then the second one, I think you fight them all.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one, you fight them all again.
Well, yeah, because in Lords of Destruction, that was like that was one of the other prime evils, like the main villain.
You kill him, and then you fight Diablo at the end, which is supposed to be the big surprise, but you know, it's never.
Who didn't expect Diablo at the end of it? Yeah.
Oh my gosh, the game's only called Diablo.
Yeah, you can't fight Diablo.
It's just like Shocker. Ganon is the bad guy in this one.
Yeah.
Like, who would have thunk it?
But
they work together. They also kind of hate each other, but
and they kind of betray each other too.
Yeah, but still, you know, you can't. It's hard to think of a more badass team of villains than three facets of the devil.
True.
Number four.
I think I got it working again.
You got it.
Number four.
Ooh.
The seven deities from Asura's Wrath, which is one of the most ridiculous games of all time, and in a very fun way, and. It's barely something you could call a game. Like, I mean, it is. Like, you do have some exploration and action, but mostly you're watching.
It's like an interactive movie, sort
of. It's a button-mashing good time.
Yeah.
Oh, man. The insanity. The insanity of that game.
Yeah, it's like watching an insane, insane version of Dragon Ball Z.
Well, yeah, it's an anime. Yeah,
it'd be better to play with an arcade stick than a controller.
But it is an M-rated anime, like, that just plays out. I mean, it's even episodes. Like, it's episodes from beginning to end with credits.
With credits, yeah.
Like, credits
after the fight. It's like, whoa. Did I beat it already? Mm-hmm. No, nope. Episode two.
Yeah, and it's just, I think it feels like the team that made the Naruto games then just said, like, we have all these Naruto skills. We don't just want to make more Naruto games. Let's make up our own thing. All right. What if it's this crazy thing where a god, a space god from with spaceships, fights other space gods after they kill his wife.
And then he grows robot arms and then loses them. And then he grows them back
when he gets really pissed off.
Brilliant.
And each of these boss encounters is just incredible because, you know, there's the... I totally forget their names, but there's the guy that's the size of a planet, and he's, you know, pokes you with his finger, basically, and then
you beat up his finger.
Yeah, you basically catch his finger and then beat his finger up until he dies. Yep. And then there's the other. I think you described him as the saber tooth to your Wolverine.
Yeah, your trainer, who's basically your saber tooth, and then also then your straight up rival, who you fight pretty much to the end.
Yeah.
And then the guy who, and it works pretty much the same. The reason they're good villains is the same as, like, in old Westerns, where the Western, like, in the beginning, like, this team of outlaws then kill this guy's family and leave him for dead, and then he comes back for revenge.
Yeah.
Though Asura is actually dead, but then he is so pissed off that he climbs his way out of the afterlife, like, five times to kill them again.
Yeah.
It seems very Kill Bill to me, even down to beating your way out of the coffin.
Yeah. Very determined.
Well, Kill Bill is a real homage to those Western films, too, and Kung Fu films. It's a timeless story of revenge. Revenge is a timeless story.
So is Ashura's Wrath the Kill Bill of video games, or is Kill Bill the film version of Ashura's Wrath?
Kill Bill came first. Number three.
Okay.
The Robot Masters from Mega Man 2.
Yeah.
Flash Man.
Oh, my God.
Ashley, why don't you look up Dr. Wily from the Mega Man cartoon, just any of his quotes. Like, those will be great for this. But, yeah, so Mega Man games live and die by their bosses. Like, they have great level design, but they all have to be themed to the boss who you will face at the end, the Robot Master. And, you know, some people can argue which... has the second best group of villains, but I have to think the Robot Masters in 2 are the best.
Yeah, they are really cool. There's like just the music for each of the stages is like memorable for each one. And then there's like, well, what are they? They're Bubble Man, Heat Man,
Air Man, Woodman,
Metal Man, which is Woodman. Probably one of the most famous
Heat
ones.
Heat Man too, right?
Yeah, Heat Man,
Flash Man,
and Crush Man.
Jeez. Quick Man,
yeah.
That's all of them.
Yeah, and
they're great. They were so cool that even though Mega Man 3 has awesome bosses, by the end of that game, you have to beat all the Mega Man 2 bosses again also because they come back.
Yeah, they're like in special suits or they are special suits that it just shows you what man they are beforehand, so you have to fight them again.
Yeah, it's really cool.
The game is so ridiculous.
And I think... their creation, they all work for Dr. Wily. Like, Dr. Wily is included in this Robot Masters group, but he makes them to fight Mega Man. But I just feel like this mix was the best. Like, I don't think there's one. I feel like in every other Mega Man game, there's at least one clunker boss where you're like, this guy's a loser.
But, yeah, and I think the matchups really made sense too because they made the most sense. Yeah, you'd use Heat. Or was it Heat Man that killed Woodman or Metal Man?
Metal Man tears apart.
Metal Man can destroy everything.
Like both
of them
worked really well against Woodman, I remember.
Well, same with like Quick Man and Flash. The one that stops the
oh yeah, Flash. You use Flash Man to get through Quick Man's level because there's those laser beams that you can't get through unless you have Flash Man's power. Mm-hmm. So you have to go through like as fast as you can.
You mean those yellow ones? Or?
Yeah, it goes.
Yeah. Interesting.
It makes all that crazy noise and it's heart poundingly exciting.
I did find something here. I'm really curious what it is. It's just called Mega Man Wily Ruins a Couple's Night Out.
Okay.
Did you guys ever see that animated series that they had a long time ago?
Yeah,
the good one, not the crappy one.
Oh, that's just from the series. Your armor and only tachyon
capacitor. I think that's from the good one.
And without it, how do you know?
You can tell that by the animation. Yeah, this is really cool, Doc. Yes, that's the new one. That's the good one.
Exactly. I'll tell you exactly. It can pull the moon out of its orbit.
But that'll cause tidal waves.
Big earthquakes.
Huge storms.
Precisely. I will create chaos to destroy everything. And after I put the moon back into its orbit with my gravitron, I'll be the only one who can rebuild the world.
I like how all in these old
this is weird.
I like how in these old cartoons, all the Link and Proto Man, they had these. Well, duh.
Of course, Dr. Doom.
Well, excuse me.
Well, Wily, you're tripping.
It's like, what?
No, yeah, those. That one, Anthony, you define as the good Mega Man one. And in a relative space, yes, it is. Though it is not. I have seen some clips that it doesn't hold up that well.
Oh, yeah, I know.
But
the intro is nice. How bad the bad one is.
But compare. Well, oh, I think what you're thinking is of Captain N, right?
There was one. I thought it was the one that we just. Like a clip from the one we just played. But it was actually like. Mega Man was in the TV and a kid was playing the game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That
and
one.
And he comes out and the kid goes in the game and it. Oh, God.
No, I have that one on an anime list because it was of anime you never heard of with Mega Man because it was actually made as an educational tool by Japan. They're like, we want to teach foreign kids about Japan, so we'll make our own anime to do that, and we'll make Mega Man the star because he's popular in Japan and America.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just like you have these scenes where Mega Man is fighting Dr. Wily, but way more scenes of young Japanese kids taking him to like landmarks around the country and just like, oh, and here's Mount Fuji. It's this tall and it does all this stuff. And here's the fish market. We get sushi here. And there's this stuff that was like edutainment. Like
I didn't see that part. That's
but then
crazy.
There's Captain, and then on Captain N, Mega Man is just green.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Constantly going like Mega. Yeah, I'm so sorry, Captain N.
And Belmont's a douche.
They're all bad. Number two. The weapons from Final Fantasy VII. So there's five of these dudes. There are always enemies that you can't, like, extra bosses to battle in pretty much all JRPGs. There's always optional bosses. But this one is special because the weapons are just so impossible, like, to beat. They're very memorable in that way. And that some are story-related, some are not. Like, some are just, like, Ruby and Emerald, impossible to defeat or close to it.
Pretty much.
Takes a long time.
Meanwhile, there's, you know, Omega, and which is the one that just dies in a cutscene.
Sapphire.
Sapphire that Sephiroth just kills in a cutscene just to show how cool he is.
Oh, is it? I don't know if
Sephiroth. Sephiroth summons them. Shinra destroys that one, right?
Yeah, they, like, blow its face off with a cannon.
Yeah,
cannons.
It's like, don't get that close to a cannon, you stupid whatever you are.
Yeah. But, yeah, the weapons were made by Earth, right? Are they like defenders of Earth or defenders of Midgard?
They weren't bad. I don't think, right? They were just kind of, it's like, I was made to protect this space. Mm-hmm. Why are you here? I have to destroy you. Or it was something weird like that.
The planet manifests them. They're like weapons that the planet created to protect itself when Genova?
You're on the right track.
When Genova landed. And then something happened with Genova, and they're like, oh, well, I guess we're not needed. So they went into hibernation, and then when Meteor was coming, they got woken up again, but they're like, well, we can't see what the problem is. It must be these humans. Mm-hmm. Kill them.
Good times.
Sounds like effective defenses.
And they added more weapons to future Final Fantasy like spin-offs, like Dirge of Cerberus. I believe they added one. Too,
yeah,
like
that's
Ultima
where,
weapon or Ultima.
That's Omega weapon.
I'm sad they took those out of the games. Mm. That made me very sad.
Number one.
Uno.
Foxhound. The team from Foxhound. Hey, why don't you look up a. Psycho Mantis.
Yes.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Yeah, we had quite the discussion trying to figure out which Metal Gear Solid team we wanted to put in here. It was I think it was between Foxhound, Cobra.
It's a bit heated.
And
Beauty and the Beast
core.
Each had their own good arguments. Like Beauty and the Beast core, I was against just because like. I dislike their the objectification angle of all of them, that they're all like these scary enemies who then underneath have like nude models underneath who will then pose.
I'm naked now.
Yeah, who will then pose for outfits or pose for photographs.
Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, the Cobra team is awesome. They are really awesome and a great boss fights. Not that Beauty and Beast don't have great boss fights, too.
I was really trying to fight for the Cobra team at first because I was like, you know, the end is really cool. Mm. You totally remember his fight. The fear is just like he's creepy. And then the pain has bumblebees everywhere.
Yeah, bumblebees.
The only one you don't really remember is the rage, I think. He kind of just shows up in the middle of nowhere and you have to fight him in that dark place.
Though, I mean, but... all those guys are great, but they kind of are great in the way that Foxhound was, too,
right.
Except they're not as memorable. Like,
yeah.
Everybody, these guys made teams of villains in games, like, actually a real thing. They all had their own relationships. They all had their own reasoning for doing stuff. They worked off each other, and they, you know, part of their deal was that you would get a lengthy backstory about each of them after they died.
Yeah.
Like, that was, they even had that kind of aspect in Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, except the game was so sped up compared to a regular Metal Gear game that you met the enemy and they started to talk about their horrible background, then you killed them, and then you learned all about their horrible background.
You chopped them to tiny chunks, and then they're like, I was really a good person, sort of.
What was that move called where he chops them up into
Zandatsu?
There we go.
Yeah. Yep.
Good cuts. Stuff. We've got some Psycho Mantis here. Here we go.
No, there's no need for words, Snake. I'm Psycho Mantis. That's right. This is no trick. It's true power. Huh. It's useless, I told you. I can read your every thought.
And then he reads your memory card.
Yeah, it's so great.
Like, what a jerk.
He's him alone is like, he would elevate this team to be on this list. Yeah. But his scene is so memorable. But then there's also Sniper Wolf, who, like, her sadness of her existence is just so, is worth mentioning. And then there's Revolver Ocelot, who goes on to be the villain of the series, like, of the entire Solid series. Like, he's the bad guy of it all.
And the cool thing about MGS, the first one, is you run into these guys multiple times. Like, you, the first time you see Sniper Wolf or you hear about her, she shoots the crap out of Meryl.
Yeah.
And Meryl's just laying there bleeding, and you have to go save her.
Meryl, oh no, Meryl.
And then,
Chop off Revolver Ocelot's hand, and then he just comes back to torture you.
Yeah, you fight Revolver Ocelot, he gets his hand chopped off, he tortures you in the whole scene where, like, depending on how you do affects the ending and who you save, and Vulcan Raven,
Meryl,
you fight him twice.
Yep. And then the only one is, like, Decoy Octopus, who just gets blown up.
Yeah.
Just is dead before you even face him.
I know you guys, a couple people mentioned that in the video. It's like, and yeah, Decoy Octopus, didn't even know he was there.
Yeah, well, it's kind of cool because, you know,
that's a joke, right?
Yeah, this guy just dies in front of you and you don't know why, and then you find out that he was actually Decoy Octopus, and it makes it cooler, where it's like, oh, that guy was actually important.
So is it kind of like a Watchmen sort of thing, where it's like, so the comedian is dead?
Not really like that.
He had I think he had a purpose, like, Decoy Octopus had a purpose. So.
So yeah, there we go. Those are the top seven most badass villain teams in video game history. All right, so now we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, the current events and previews and reviews and stuff.
Yay!
Radio Radar is brought to you in part by Audible.com, where you can download audiobooks like Extra Lives, Why Video Games Matter, and Ready Player One. Download a free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/gamesradar.
And we're back for the current events segment on Radio Radar, episode 105. And we have a new voice joining us.
Hello, Ryan Teljanik.
Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Henry.
So, as part of the current events, you were at PAX Prime in Seattle.
I was. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
What's the word on the street? What was your overall take away from the event?
PAX was really great. I mean, it's continually every single year more packed. I almost said
packed.
More packed. There are more people there almost every single time, you know, and it's really cool to see so many people coming together to celebrate their, you know, just genuine passion for games.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as there are every year, there was tons of stuff on the show floor, lots of booths set up where people were just kind of playing, you know, tabletop games or there was a, I walked through a room where there were Nintendo 64s and GameCube set up and people were playing Smash Brothers. It was like all kinds of really, really cool stuff.
Did you see any games there? I mean, did you play? Or you definitely saw Saints Row 4.
Yeah.
Gat out of hell.
Yeah, I did. The standalone. So I was a little confused, right? Because it's not like it's not a full-blown Saints Row game. It's not like Saints Row 5 or anything. But it is a standalone downloadable game. And in it, you play as Johnny Gat and you go to hell. Or rather, the boss of the Saints gets kidnapped by Satan.
Yeah, they're like using a Ouija board, and then he gets kidnapped by Satan.
Yeah, and then you go in after him. Actually, it's like a co-op game because you can play as Johnny Gat or Kenzie Kensington or whatever her name is. So the two of them kind of team up. But I got to talk to like one of the lead designers on it, and he was telling me, you know, obviously with the superpower stuff from Saints Row 4, it was really difficult to find a place to go after that. And so they talked about like, okay, well, what if we went to, like, an alien planet? Well, we sort of already touched on aliens in Saints Row 4. So then they decided to go to hell, and I do think, I agree with them that it makes a lot of sense, because then you do whatever. So, like, you can fly, because you have the wings of a fallen angel, and that kind of feels like it does in the Batman Arkham games, where you get more speed as you're swooping down, and then you can pull up to continue your flight. But you can fly a little bit more, a little bit longer than you can in Batman. So there's that. You get all kinds of goofy weapons. I had like a gun that was shooting locust swarms and that sort of thing. They're all health themed. Awesome. Mm. Wow. And you get some powers that are really cool. Like you can summon a ton of different kinds of demons to fight with you. And I also had this aura ability that when you activate it, anybody near you worships you, and then that gives you a damage modifier, damage bonus, depending on how many people worship you.
That's really cool.
And they were talking too about they had created these weapons. There are 7 unique weapons, all modeled after one of the deadly sins. And so they only showed one, and it was the Armchair Mageddon. It was that Lazy Boy chair with the Gatling guns on the arms. It was modeled after Sloth.
They're having way too much fun there.
Yeah, it was really fun. I mean, if you liked 4, it's more of that, but with, you know, hell-themed abilities and toys.
Are you still running around a city?
Yeah, you're running around hell, and it's really funny because
city.
Hell city.
Yeah, all the residents drive really shitty, burnt-out cars from, like, the 1970s.
And it's for next-gen as well.
Yeah, well, that's one of the cool things, right? Like, you can get... It was really confusing because there's a bunch of different versions you can buy on like PS4 and Xbox One. You can get just Saints Row 4 remastered, or you can get just Gat Out of Hell, or you can get the combined pack for like $50. So.
Interesting.
Nice.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways you can do it depending on what you're wanting to do. But I'm trying to think. Gosh, we should. I should have pulled up that article. That.
Well, okay. Like, what was the standout indie game to you? Because it is a good place for indie games.
Yeah. So I think one of the ones that David Roberts, one of our writers, and myself were both really, really into was this game called Keep Talking or the Bomb Explodes. I think is what it's called. And it's a VR game. So somebody's wearing like an Oculus Rift VR headset. And what they're seeing is a virtual bomb with, like, tons of wires and all these confusing, you know, parts and pieces to it. It's a two-player game, though. So one person is in VR. Mm-hmm. The other is sitting next to that person with a full-on instruction manual in their hand. And this is like a 100-page binder of notes. And so the bomb is randomly generated. And the person with the instruction manual has to have the person who's seeing the bomb explain to them what they're seeing. And then you're flipping through the notebook to try and find out how to defuse it.
Oh, man.
That's crazy.
It was really amazing. Like, people were getting so into it. And you only have you have a time limit. So it's like a really intense, like, oh, my gosh, and everybody's working together to try to defuse
the bomb. That's really cool.
It's like, what a cool use of VR. Wow. I never would have thought What's
that
he?
That is awesome.
That sounds like something out of those 90s movies where there's like a plane with a bomb in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and he has the like voice. All right, executive decision.
Yeah. Executive
Don't
decision.
Cut that.
Yeah.
Don't cut that.
I have to say, too, one of my other favorite games that I got to see was it doesn't actually have a title right now. It's just codenamed Game 4
by the
Behemoth. Mm-hmm. Those are the guys that made Castle Crashers and Battle Block Theater. Anyways, I definitely recommend you see you watch the trailer because it's super, super funny. I got to talk to the guy who did all the voice work for it, and he's narrating like this evil sounding mastermind. And the intro is like this really goofy thing where it's like, I used to wonder what the earth must have been like before the bear ran into it and shattered it into it. And it's like you're seeing this giant bear from Battle Block Theater. It's the end of that game. And it smashes into a planet, and it just, like, you know, sort of destroys it. And so anyways, it's a turn-based strategy game like Fire Emblem or XCOM.
Oh, that is
XCOM.
All right. I'm not into that.
And, you know, it's super, super funny. I was laughing, like, the entire time. But it's also, they were talking about we wanted to sort of scale back the complexity. So that's not to say it's not hard. It was really, really challenging, the bits that I played. But what they're talking about is it's very visually easy to understand. So if you start off with a guy with a sword and shield, and obviously he blocks projectiles pretty well, whether they be arrows or Uzi guns, because they tied in time travel to their game somehow. So all sorts of crazy, goofy things going on. But his sword doesn't really penetrate armor. Meanwhile, your character with a mace crushes armor. Like, it's all very visually understandable things like that. So They're getting rid of a lot of like bloated stats and all that stuff. There's very few things you really have to keep track of, and they're more emphasizing like the moment to moment strategy of playing it. So
it's cool.
Yeah, it was really, really neat, and I was really impressed because the line to play it was wrapped around the booth like the entire show.
Mm-hmm. I do like nice. That PAX can be a place where people will just premiere a game. Like, we brought the play it. Like, here it is, right? Like, they've done it in big cases with Duke Nukem Forever. But they also did it with, like, indies, like Behemoth can pull that off.
I mean, and there were tons and tons of really, really cool-looking indie stuff there. So, but those were definitely two of my, I think, notable favorites.
Did you buy any cool toys or T-shirts or anything?
I didn't buy any toys this time. I did get to talk with Sakaguchi.
Oh, yeah.
How do you pronounce his first name?
I think it's Hironobu.
I'm always terrified to say it for fear of screwing it up. But he's the creator, guy who made Final Fantasy, mm-hmm. creator of Final Fantasy.
And he's grown back his mustache.
Yeah, stache looks good on him. I can't pull one off.
No, he is famous for his mustache, but he shaved it off a few years ago, and now it's grown back. So.
Yeah, well, I talked with him about he was showing and actually this is the first time I've ever been genuinely excited for a mobile game. But
really?
he was showing his new mobile game that they're making. It's called Terra Battle. And it's he was talking a lot about, you know, one of the exciting things for him about working on mobile is it's this new thing. And he's like, I've been making games for like 30 years. So the chance to do something new is really cool because I don't get that opportunity very often. But one thing I thought was really interesting was he compared mobile games now to the Famicom back when that launched, or the NES. And he was saying, like, you know, back before I made Final Fantasy, I kept telling everybody, like, it's impossible to ever make an RPG on the Famicom because there's no way you would fit a game that big on a cart that size.
Oh, that's fun.
And then he said, and then I saw Dragon Quest, and then I was like, oh, I guess you can make an RPG on the film. And so that's kind of what led to Final Fantasy, right? And so he compared mobile gaming right now to that experience. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, right now a lot of people think it's just baby games. And I asked him a bit about, you know, the perception of mobile gaming and why is his Mistwalker, his studio, pursuing mm-hmm. that as opposed to maybe console gaming or something like that. And you know, it came down to the size of his team. He's got 8 people on his team. One of which is a programmer, and then so they can't really, you know, console games are a much harder sell for them, but also it was more of the excitement. And so Terra Battle is this really, really cool and surprisingly complex RPG game that and the guy who wrote Lost Odyssey is also writing this.
Oh, wow.
And so
wow.
It's got a lot of those really awesome narrative bits that pop up, like, because that was one of my favorite parts of Lost Odyssey was those short stories that would pop up that you could read. And this has a lot of that kind of thing in it as well. And the battle is like a grid-based thing. It was really, really interesting, but it's extremely difficult to describe. I would recommend checking out a video of it on YouTube. It is really cool. It's a lot of dragging your characters around. You have like 4 seconds to move your characters around on this grid. And the way you attack is by sandwiching enemies between two or more of your characters. And so you have to quickly move everything around. So it's a very frantic, fast-paced thing. And there's lots of cool story stuff, as I mentioned, like the Lost Odyssey style of writing. And lots of customization. There's like over 100 characters you can collect and play. And it looks really cool.
Yeah.
So that was fun. That was a fun chat.
Cool. Well, I know you're busy, Ryan, so you got to head off if you need to. But though, about reviews though, I haven't read the Tales of Zillia review too yet.
No bueno. It's my understanding. Not good. Too grindy, really boring, and you repeat like the same. I guess there's like this dimension hopping part of the story, and all that does is make you replay the same pieces of content over and over again, but with like different colored monsters in them. Mm-hmm. You know,
sounds exciting.
I remember Alan Wake, that Alan Wake DLC game was American Nightmare. It was just like that too. Like, go to these three places. You died at the end. Well, probably you need to relive this life 2 more times. Like, really, I need to do that, huh?
But, but before we switch off PAX talk, couple other big games that I played saw and was, you know, still very excited for. I've never been much into Civ, but after playing Beyond Earth, I just started playing Civ 5 a lot.
Oh wow!
Since I got back from PAX, and I'm really, really excited for that game. It was very, very cool.
It is easy to just jump right back into a Civ game and just play for like 2 hours.
Well, you know, the problem I think I've always had with Civ is they're just so complex and difficult to understand, and there's a lot of different things to know about these already established races of people and things like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas one thing I think that's cool about Beyond Earth is because it's all sci-fi, like none of it's really already happening, obviously. So it's much easier, I think, to jump into from a new player's perspective because the UI has been overhauled and a lot of the mechanics have been implemented in such a way where it's really easy to understand what's going on, I think. So really excited for that one. And then, of course, my favorite game of the show was definitely Evolve. Every time I play that game, I have an amazing time with it and really, really excited for it.
Yeah, February. Too far away. Mm-hmm. Too far away from February.
Very cool.
But awesome. Awesome. Well, I'm glad you enjoy PAX. It's too bad we all couldn't be there. And did you see any fans?
Yeah. I got to meet up with a few of the listeners. It was really, really great talking with some of you guys. And I hope we'll get to see you next year.
All right. Well, cool. Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
That's the end of our community segment. We're going to take the community segment's coming next. And that's what we're going to take a break for right now. Welcome back to the community segment.
Community segment on Radio Radar. We read your stuff if it's good enough.
I don't need your judging eyes, Lorenzo.
That's a great song.
Judging.
I love that song. Yeah. You know what else we could have talked about in the previous segment, I realize now, just there's a bunch of stuff that happened in Japan with games for TGS, but honestly, like, most of it doesn't matter. Like, there is a new 3DS, and it's called, quote, new 3DS.
yeah.
Which seems to be the Game Boy Color of the jump from Game Boy to Game Boy Color is the jump from new 3DS to new 3DS.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited for this a little bit. I just got a 3DS, so I don't think I'll be getting one for a long time. But this one has the new C-Stick. I think they're calling it a C-Stick, right?
They're calling it a C-Stick.
Yeah, it's called it's a little nub. It's not quite as big as the normal joystick or what slide pad, whatever they call it.
Circle pad.
So it's like right on top of all your buttons, like the X, Y.
I remember going to my first TGS in 2011. I'm very sad I'm not going this year's TGS. But at my first TGS in 2011 was when they started selling, like, they announced the second circle pad, mm-hmm. and when it was rumored, people were like, "Oh shoot, yeah, hey, look,
we got a game."
Let her in. Sorry.
Oh snaps! Sorry.
Distractions.
Yeah, Jan should
beautiful
come on
distractions.
This one. No, okay, all right, bye.
Okay,
okay,
Jen, just come in and distract the podcast, and
Jan
then leave.
Jan just wanted to show us that we got in. I think we could say, look, we're reviewing Destiny next week, so maybe we got some early copies of it, as is the custom.
And maybe we didn't.
Maybe the PR custom that happened where they sent us early copies of the game for review, maybe it didn't.
But I don't even think we could play it until the servers go on. So.
Maybe not.
Well, whatever.
Maybe not.
We're all talking in theoreticals here, guys.
Yeah,
we're...
So what ifs.
Yeah. Anyway, but anyways, the new 3DS. Let's talk about that for a little. So you were saying.
Yeah, So I was at TGS the first time, and when they announced that second stick, everybody thought it was fake, and they're just like, come on, Nintendo wouldn't do that. They would just make this bulky, dumb-looking add-on to play things on a second stick. Like, no, they totally did. They 100% did, and it was only... I think there have been 7 games ever that even used it.
Yeah, it was like Resident Evil, a couple other ones with it.
Metal Gear Solid 3, Monster Hunter, and Kingdom Hearts 3D. And I think those are kind of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the XL released, and that kind of just disappeared.
Well, they then made an XL version, but they only sold it in Japan.
Right.
They sold it in limited quantities in America because they, like, I think Nintendo of America got that it was silly.
Yeah. Now the new 3DS kind of implements all of the extra buttons that extension had. So you get the L and R, or is it ZR? ZL.
ZL
and ZR.
ZR, yeah.
Buttons on the top. And then they move some things around, like the power buttons in the front now. The stylus is in the front.
The start and select buttons are gone. The ones you never use.
Yeah. And then I think the coolest thing is that the 3D, the way that 3D works is the camera tracks your eyes. So it won't, you know, mess up as much if you're, you know, tilting the game, the console, or like moving it side to side. It'll track your eyeballs, and you know, you'll see the 3D from different angles.
Oh. Yeah, that is a cool thing. And the screen, so they announced a new 3DS in regular and XL, like coming at the same time. And though the regular one still is like a 10% bigger screen over regular 3DS.
Yeah,
and. Though what's most interesting to me is I was thinking, oh, I'll buy the XL. But then I saw that the XL doesn't come with switchable faceplates. The regular new 3DS does. And they have some really awesome, in Japan, switchable faceplates that just can make your 3DS whatever. So it kind of replaces the need of special edition 3DSs because you can just buy a new faceplate and make your 3DS whatever you want.
That's true.
Yeah, that is pretty sweet.
So
you think since they didn't really announce that it's coming to the U.S., correct? I think it's just Japan only so far.
Nintendo of America has not made a statement either way, I believe. Nintendo of Europe said it is 2015 release. Uh-huh. So I think Nintendo of America just isn't ready to say when it will be. But I think I would find it highly surprising if it came out in Japan and Europe and not America.
Yeah, I wonder if Smash Brothers will be compatible with the new C-Stick, because that's kind of a thing.
See, that's the thing with those new buttons, like the ZR and ZL or whatever. Uh-huh. Are those going to be like integral buttons that you need, like, to play the game to pull off certain things, or will they just be shortcut ones you can customize?
The way they're laid out on the console is like that you have to reach over buttons to press them. So they're more like menu kind
of
things that you use.
So the system does get a slight graphical boost too. Mm-hmm. Like it is a little stronger than it was before. And it can play basically Wii games. Like the one they announced is Xenoblade. Mm-hmm. It's getting a port only in Japan so far. And so it's out in next month. It's out next month in Japan. No solid release date for the U.S. or Europe, which is weird because everything's so international now. It's just strange. Mm, and then Persona 5 got announced for the PS4, which I'm very excited.
Ah!
So excited. I thought I would have to keep around my PS3 just for that game, and now nope, gonna play.
Check it. Just hooray! Throw it out the window.
Yep. Or, you know, yeah, I'd rather destroy it than like give it to somebody. You might
yeah, with all your personal data.
Yeah. No, oh, actually, yeah. That's 100% why I wouldn't give it to somebody.
Yeah. Destroy it.
You gotta wipe it, and that's that takes way too much work. That's I did that once.
Take a hammer to it. Easy peasy.
Done.
Throw it out.
All right. Why don't we play the community segment song again, since that turned into an impromptu news segment? Yeah, so last week's question of the week was asking folks if they if there was ever a scary horror game that really like preyed upon, or a game that preyed upon their biggest fear, like, and how it did that, like, you know, asking people to reveal their biggest fear here. But we had a lot of commenters that were ready to do so. So first off, I'll read the first one. Is Angry Black Rob wrote, my greatest fear is that all my hard work in life amounts to nothing. Despite how much this feels like I'm like a therapist. Despite how much I work, the idea that I'll get nowhere and my struggles are pointless shakes me to the core. Sometimes I have nightmares. I'm back in violent streets of the hood I used to live in, and the daily gunshots that used to be my alarm clock school are reality in my adult life as well.
Sweet Jesus.
Because the eternal darkness had a scare that nearly made me quit the game. There is a point in the game where if your insanity meter is low and you try and save the game file, instead it takes you to the motions of erasing your whole game save file. After it does this, it shows you the screen with no saves on it, then it laughs at you and returns to normal. F you, video game.
Oh my God. All
right.
That's horrible.
That is horrible. Good God.
Oh, man.
I think Ryan actually had a bit about Eternal Darkness and that specific thing.
Huh. RXB says, I'm not good with scary games, but I needed achievement points. I played Condemned on the 360. The constant dark and claustrophobic setting really messed with me. Also, the weapons were next to useless and enemies were so agile. I played one level per day, but never at nighttime. I really suffered for those points.
The names of the the names at the bottom of that paper and then the
All right. So this one is from Hernsey. Well, the game that got me the game that got to me the most is not exactly a scary video game. So I have a fear of heights. I just can't do it. Ferris wheels, never been on one. With that said, my heart was racing when I started climbing that radio tower in the new Tomb Raider.
Oh.
Even in a new video game, I would terrify myself by looking down, well, around Laura. There were many parts of the game where Laura would be high above the ground and it wouldn't bother me, but this particular scene was so well created that it was almost too much for me to bear. It was the fact that I knew the game didn't end here and that I knew Laura would be okay that I was able to pull through. The interrogation room in Resident Evil 2 gets second place. Good show. Ciao.
Yeah, that Tomb Raider tower was pretty intense.
It was
intense.
Pretty high.
Yeah,
that started to get to me after a bit. I was like, whoa.
I was like, how high does she need to go up to, like, you know, hit the switch? Like, where is it?
And then the rung breaks in her hand. You're like, hold on.
I think that's the best scene in the game. Like, that's the best moment.
Oh, when the plane comes?
Yeah, well, just the whole the climb all the way to the top, and then the satisfaction you get of, like, when she, like, oh, you can hear me. Oh, thank God. Come help us.
Like, yeah. It's like, we're on our way. Oh, it's coming right for me. Oh, it's coming right for me.
Oh, God. Yeah. Doesn't he get, like, hit by lightning while she's watching or something?
Yeah.
That was a little silly.
Yeah. The magic.
That was the curse of the island.
They do talk about that in the comic book, but yeah. Okay. Tractor Biker says, Vertigo. As soon as I saw the tower radio in Tomb Raider, I know it was going to have a problem. The developers did an awesome job of playing up to the fear of heights, even with a few cliched break rung moments. So we got two for that Tomb Raider.
Oh, wow, that Tomb Raider.
That one really affects people.
That's really impressive with people, yeah.
But all right, so the winner of this week is blah, blah, blah. You know, I am going to go with Hernsey just because that is such a great discussion of, like, scary heights and being scared of heights. I like that one. So since you're the winner, email me at radioradar@gamesradar.com and you will win a thing.
Something cool.
It tells us, you know, maybe tell us what game systems you own and all that.
What kind of games you like.
Yep, what type of games you like, what you want.
What's your favorite color?
We're like matchmakers with our prizes.
Maybe we'll send you something.
Yeah.
All right, so this week's question of the week. Yeah, you know, there's been so much negativity just all around about, you know, the term gamer and the gaming community, and I'm tired of that. I'm tired of just the negativity. I want to talk about something happy about games and how we all love games. That's kind of why we're here.
Yay.
So this week's question of the week is, what is a fond memory you have, a fun time that you and a friend connecting over a video game? Like, just a happy moment of, like, where games brought you together. And I will start with, I believe it would have been, I was really into pro wrestling as a kid, but then until the late 90s, I was not. And then in came the WCW versus NWO World Tour game on the N64. And just playing that a little bit, like, in a tag match with my friend, like, it was just this awesome feeling of teamwork and just like we got so into it of just like, no, I have to win this pro wrestling match. No, me. And just all my friends had so much competition in us that we actually set up like belts and like who was the champion of each belt. And we would challenge each other for it. And we would have like these tournaments for it and everything. And we got so into just this one game and its sequels that this was how a game really made us feel connected.
Hmm. I don't really have one about a friend, but I used to play Contra, the original Contra, with my dad.
Oh.
And that was when I was a kid. I was like 7 years old or something. But my dad has, I don't think since, played a video game or before this ever played any kind of video game. I don't know what attracted him to Contra, but he was always like a World War II history buff or something. So maybe like, he decided to play this with me. And every time I turned it on, he was like, okay, put on two player and we'd just play. And, it was just cool. Cause you know, we'd play the super hard game and he would just play until his thumbs hurt and leave. But you know, it was always kind of like, my dad really liked this game and it's still one of my favorite games to play. And, you know, multiplayer is always crazy. Yeah.
I'm going to share that Contra moment with you.
Oh. Uh-oh.
Contra brings people together.
Yeah.
Me and my cousin had Contra on the Nintendo. It was the first one. And every time I went over his house, we would always play that. And we both completely sucked at the game. So we got to like the second level. That's as far as we could get. But it wasn't about sucking or winning. It was just at that point popping in, playing the game, shooting things as much as we could, passing the level if we could, and then starting over again.
We should play some Contra. Mm-hmm. I could beat it by myself.
The first one? Or are we talking current?
The first one.
I like
Neo Contra.
That one's good.
So I think I have a lot of good stories, but this one kind of sticks out in my mind. My best friend, like my best friend, since I was 7 years old, we would always play N64 games together when we were kids. And get to our teenage years, I get a phone call from his friend. And he's like, yeah, your best friend is gay and I'm outing him. And the reason he hasn't told you is because he was afraid you would hate him. Because he didn't know how you feel and how you would react. So I ran over to his house because he lived across the street, and I just came in and I didn't know what to say, so I said, do you want to play Perfect Dark? So we just played Perfect Dark and everything was great, and he's still my best friend.
Oh, that's such a sweet story.
I like
it. So nice. You know, actually, I'll add one more to that because that reminded me. It's funny that yours and I are both on N64. Mine is a little heavy, just so.
Oh,
no.
Well, no, like, this is 1999, actually, the week that Phantom Menace came out. This I remember when it was, but, like, my uncle passed away. Like, my uncle on my father's side, like, his brother-in-law, whatever. Like, he passed away, like, unexpectedly, like, just a heart attack out of nowhere. And so it was just very uncomfortable. Like, it was the first time, like, I was 17 at the time. It was the first time I'd ever really had to deal with, like, death as a somewhat of an adult. And so it was really heavy. And then especially like we go home and we go visit the family in Arkansas. And I have two cousins there who I was really close to as a kid, partially through video games. But we had kind of drifted apart. And, you know, of course, they lost their father. They're going through all this heavy stuff. And but then we're just like, you know what? Do you guys have any video games? They're like, oh, yeah, let's play GoldenEye. And you turn it on, and they're just, like, so good at GoldenEye. Like, me and my brother thought we were – my brother especially, he was the best in our group, and my cousins were destroying us at GoldenEye. And it was just this great moment of just, like, easing the tension and just, like, we could just get into – GoldenEye and just go like, oh man, you got me or whatever, and not have to think about, you know, the mourning that was going on around us, at least just for a little bit. Like, it was a really nice moment.
Yay, that's really nice.
So cool. Yeah, see, why don't you share a nice moment where video games helped you connect with somebody, a loved one, let's just say a loved one, not just a friend, just somebody who is close to you. And share them in the comments on this week's. Let's just spread the positivity around about how much, about all the good things video games can do for you. And, you know, do that in the comments on this week's episode 105, Radio Radar, on the website, gamesradar.com. Also, you know, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Games Radar, and our Facebook page. You know, it's a good way to keep up to date with everything that we're doing. And, boy, next week is going to be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Destiny on the 9th.
Yeah. Say goodbye to your nightlife.
And then, of course, at some point on Friday, on the Japanese eShop will be Smash Brothers 3DS.
Oh.
So,
shaking.
You know.
You okay over there?
Excitement abounds. We've got a Japanese 3DS. We're going to be playing it. Like, so we got at least one. We're going to be playing that Japanese version. I can, unless something, you know, unless the internet
goes
dies,
catastrophically
something,
wrong.
Something goes terribly wrong with our Japanese 3DS, we're going to be playing that. All right, so yeah, that's just a preview of the craziness that's around us. After the dead months of summer, finally games are happening again. Like, and I'm excited.
The gaming begins. Yeah.
And also, if you guys like watching us do stupid stuff and play games, be sure to watch our live stream every Wednesday from 3:30 to 5 p.m. Pacific time, and we'll see you there.
Yeah, you should check out some of the archive ones, like our Simpsons one that I was on. I thought we had a really good time.
That was a really good one.
And you guys did one. The Sims this week. Was that fun?
We did.
Yeah, the Sims one was actually pretty good. We got K-House going.
Yeah.
Shit. Okay, quickly, Ashley, in under a minute, share your early review impressions of The Sims 4.
It's interesting. They definitely brought it back to vanilla. A lot of stuff that people liked is gone, and that's kind of a bummer. But the emotion system they put in and the customizability, the increased customizability, those are really cool, and I'm really enjoying working with those. I'm going to keep playing. I'm going to figure out even more things. So people should read my Sims 4 review diary if they want to see what I've seen so far, and that's up on the website right now.
We also have cheats on the website now. More coming next week.
Oh, Sims cheats specifically.
Sims 4 cheats.
I thought you were just saying, like, we got cheats. Look at them on the website. We got
Sims 4 cheats that are up. There are a few up, and then we're going to have a lot more next week.
Make yourself a giant TV.
Yeah, cheats don't matter as much in most games these days, but in Sims, it's still a big deal.
Mother load.
Oh, and let me know if you're playing Destiny, because I need raiding partners.
We all do. Destiny for
Xbox
PS4.
Xbox One.
PS4.
Master Race.
We've got a console war brewing here just over Destiny. All right, so until next time, Radio Radar out!